At the Table with Tony is brought to you by Trafe Hustlin'. That's www.traifhustlin.com. Your home for all things barbecue.
Welcome to the Table with Tony. My name is Anthony Sciglia, better known as Tony Mangia. And today I'm being joined by Jim Toscano. He is a filmmaker, a producer, a director. He has his own company. So we're going to talk about him, about growing up Italian-American in Detroit, and also about filmmaking in this time of the COVID-19 pandemic, the coronavirus pandemic. So, Jim, I want to thank you for taking some time out to come on to the show today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Tony.
my pleasure. So, yeah. Well, we met, I guess it was now, it's going to be 2 years or so at the Pretender premiere at the in Jersey City.
Right. Yep. Yeah. That was about 2 years ago. Yep. That was one of the first film festivals that the Pretender was in. Yeah.
So we'll get into what the Pretender is and who the Pretender is in a bit, but I kind of want to start off with the basics. I'm going to start from the beginning. So Jim, you are a Detroit boy, born and raised. Yeah. But let's talk a little bit about where is your family from in Italy?
Okay, yeah. So my family is from Sicily, Terracini, Sicily, and all my grandparents came to Detroit. And like, I just talked to my mom actually and asked her exactly what year. She said 1935 was when they all came. So the interesting thing about Detroit is, you know, as far as I know, on the east side of Detroit is where all my family moved to from Sicily. And a ton of them are from Terracini, Sicily, which is a small town outside of Palermo. And they all came here. They all, like, you know, probably like a lot of regions, this little 2.5 mile radius city in Sicily, they all came here and, you know, kept sending for each other, I'm sure, you know, as I've heard. And they all populated in this little area and created almost like a, not only a little Italy, but a little Terracini, you know, which blows my mind. It's so cool.
But let me ask you, is there a reason why they decided to go to Detroit as opposed to Chicago, as opposed to New York, New Orleans? Is there a reason why they chose Detroit?
Well, you know, it's a lot of because of the big three. Mm-hmm. They knew that they could get jobs here with Ford and Chrysler and General Motors. But, you know, it's when they call it Fords with an S at the end, you know, of course.
I've never been to Detroit. It's on my list of places of the Little Italy's to visit. I'm sure it's changed a lot over the years. But so what was – so did you actually grow up in this Italian – the Sicilian enclave or
– Not exactly. So before – up until like the 60s, like the late 60s with the riots, a lot of the Sicilian Italian lived in Detroit. And, you know, I'm sure some people might – you know, if I get anything wrong, feel free to point it out, you know, anyone – commenting, but they all kind of moved to the east side of Detroit. The Sicilians did. And after like the riots, you know, after the late 60s, they moved. Like, I grew up in East Detroit. It's a separate city, but they called it East Detroit.
Okay.
And then like in the 90s, when I was a kid, they renamed it East Point. And we all still call it East Detroit because that's where we grew up. But so they all seemed to gravitate towards the east side. And then after the 60s, it just kept moving north. You know, like East Detroit is still on the east side of Detroit or on the east side of the city, but it's a little bit north. And you know, you go by mile roads. So, like, if you know Eminem grew up on 8 Mile, right? That's everyone's, like, point of reference. But that's like, the border. That's the city where the city ends for the most part on 8 Mile. And I grew up on between 9 and 10 Mile. Okay. And then they just kept moving north and north. And now, you know, we're all the way to, you know, 30 Mile, you know, basically. So, yeah, it's I don't know if that's how it happens in other cities around the U.S., but that's kind of how it happened here. It just kept moving north, but kind of staying on the east side for the most part. So,
yeah, I could speak for, say, New Jersey, New York, which a lot of people, they either went Long Island or they went to Jersey from the city. Okay. So that was kind of like the emigration pattern out of the city. Yeah. That's how they emigrated out into the suburbs. Yeah. But yeah, obviously, I mean, Detroit was a hub. So, I mean, people had, there was work there back in the day. I know, obviously, things have changed throughout the years And that's for a different show.
Yeah, exactly. I know there's a lot to be said there.
Yeah. But
the other interesting thing is, you know, even though I think everyone came here initially for the automotive, my family, like my close family, has all worked in like produce and meat especially. My mom was, she worked at like a supermarket, which Kroger, I don't know if you had Kroger's out there, or Chatham, I'm sorry, Chatham she worked at. Mm-hmm. And it was like a Kroger, you know. But she was a meat wrapper. So she worked there and she worked in the deli and all that. And then my father worked at Hobart. So Hobart made all the mixing machines and the slicers.
Oh, yeah.
So
that,
my dad
was based in Detroit?
It was in Ohio. But, you know, it was close. So what happened was, and I guess it was a thing where a lot of these guys, like my dad, he was in Vietnam. And after Vietnam, after the war ended, he came home. And it was like he went to trade school at Hobart in Ohio. So he became like, you know, a repair guy. And so that's how he met my mom, going around to all the markets.
And those are some those are some of the best mixtures, the Hobarts. Like those things are like, yeah. I mean, people still have them in their bakeries and their shops. Over here, I see them.
Yeah.
But now, they are. But the interesting thing is that you mentioned that your parents are from the same town in Sicily, right?
So my parents aren't exactly. My dad's family is from Sicily, not Terracini.
Okay.
But funny you should say that. My wife now, she – now, my first only wife. She'd kill me. No, my wife and her family are from Terracini, Sicily. So – and we didn't know each – I mean, we went to high school together, and it was years later that we started dating and got married. But, you know, my wife's grandparents – or my wife's grandparents came from Terracini also. And when we started dating, it was like the coolest thing because – my family even knew, they knew of her family in Terracini. So they're like, did your grandfather have six brothers? And she's like, yeah, he was, you know, he was the seventh. And oh yeah, we know them. So it was just like the, you know, like I told you off air, like jackpot. I mean, it was just the coolest thing ever, you know?
Now, where is your dad's family from in Sicily?
I don't know exactly. They were a little bit southern. My grandfather was a fisher. My dad passed away when I was 6 years old, so okay. I don't know all the facts tightly. But I have a visual aid here. So I was going to tell you, you know, I work our studio, our production studio you see behind me is in what they call Eastern Market inside of Detroit. And this was like it's an old produce market, an old food market that's been here since 1891, I believe.
Wow.
So my wife's grandfather worked here. You know, everyone's worked here. And so this is a picture of – how can you see this? Let me see here.
That way, yeah.
There you go. So this is my grandfather, my dad's dad. He was a manager of, like, a market.
Wow.
In Eastern Market. And this is from, like, 1964.
How did you find that?
My dad took the picture.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he had these little slides. And I said, I'm going to blow this up and put it in the studio because I love the market here. And so I kept all the – make it look like a slide because my dad So I'm like super – we're super proud to be in this
market. But it's wild that your family through the generation has some sort of a connection to where you are today.
Yeah,
I guess also business wise, but also familial wise. So it's a really awesome story. So
yeah, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say. So Eastern Market was the hub back then, and then now it seems like they're trying to bring in some new life to Eastern Market. Am I correct?
Yeah. So these guys are great. There's an Eastern Market like partnership, a conservatory, you know, like a historical group. And it's still a functioning food market. You know, there's meat and there's produce and there's vegetables, but it's been kind of expanding. And, you know, I'm in a building right now. You could, you know, see some of it behind me that's like, you know, you see the old brick on the wall and everything. And this was a slaughterhouse back in the day, but they don't, you know, they're not up to code anymore, some of these buildings for that. Mm-hmm. But I'm right. Like I look out the window and I can see the open air market, They've been reusing it, repurposing it for, like, you know, people like us, like artists and different businesses, to kind of fill in the gaps. And then the food industry is still staying in the market. They're just spreading out a little bit into newer buildings. So it's like these guys are doing like the best job in the world to preserve it, but keep it fresh.
That's awesome. I know that a lot of cities have markets similar to that. I know in New York, we have something called Chelsea Market, which was originally owned by Nabisco. And now it's a food. They have restaurants. There's shopping. So it's actually the Food Network was located in there for a while. So let's talk a little bit about your production company. So it's called Free Age Productions, right?
Right.
So did you go to school to be a filmmaker?
I went to college right after high school. I was like 17 when I graduated. I went right to work at an ad agency. I was a messenger. And then I also went to school at night. I went to Wayne State down here, and I went for advertising. And I worked in advertising for a while as a messenger in advertising. And I always wanted to get into filmmaking. You know, I just thought, like, it's impossible. You know, you can't really make a living. You know, like, I always tell everyone, like, when I was, like, 17, my mom wasn't even, like, telling me to go to college. She was like, go work at Ford's. You'll get great insurance. Go work on the line. They pay them a great over. I was like, oh, I don't want to do that. So, but, you know, at some point, you know, I worked in advertising. I loved it. And at some point, I just thought, like, I got to do really what I love to do. And I started going to school. There was a little film school actually in this market. It was before I was working there. But there was a little film school. It was called Detroit Film Center, or Detroit Film Coalition. They had two names. And it was like a clubhouse, I call it. It's like a grassroots film school that I went to at night after work every night. And that's where I started. And as soon as I started there, I started doing, you know, videos for free and, you know, anything I could do to keep my hands on some film equipment, you know. And, you know, coincidentally, like, we'll get into it later, but The Pretender was one of the first things I shot a couple clips of, you know, back then. But yeah, I did go to that film school, and then I worked at like an automotive magazine. It's called Auto Week, in their video department, and that's where I met my business partner here at Free Age, okay. Danny. I think you met him in New Jersey.
Yes, we did. Yeah,
Danny Janino. So
another paisan.
Yeah, so it worked. So that worked out great. So Danny and I left the magazine together and started Free Age about 5 years ago.
So now what is your, I mean, we are going to get into The Pretender, but what else what else do you produce, or what else do you direct? What other films are you making at Free Age?
Yeah. So Danny and I, we do a lot of, because automakers are here, we do a lot of work for them. We do a lot of work for the ad agencies, for the automakers. And it's a lot of, it's a lot of fun stuff. It's a lot of like video work for social media. Like we did a lot of work for Jeep, where we'll go to Moab, Utah, and shoot the Jeeps kind of tearing it up in the trails out there. We've done that. We've done a lot of, we did some Nissan work, but we do a lot of traveling for brands like that, Ram trucks, Jeep, Chevrolet, a lot of lifestyle stuff. And so we're on the road a lot shooting. And I'd say like kind of like documentary style, you know, like profiles on people. We did something with Casey Curry. He's an off-road racer. Mm-hmm. And so we'll do a lot of that stuff, and we'll go out and shoot it. And then we bring it back here and we assemble a team based on different projects to edit and, you know, get the pieces out to social media or TV. That's a lot of our work, but we also – you know, more and more have been doing a lot of work for like the local PBS station. We do some TV show work and stuff like that. And some documentaries locally. We did a full length documentary about like Detroit architecture, which was cool. Like, you know, we've seen these buildings our whole life, and we dug a little deeper to find out like, oh, there's a Yamasaki building. You know, he built that building, you know, that was his project before he did the World Trade Center, you know, like that kind of thing. So, yeah, we did some great, you know, investigating in that documentary, and that came out a couple years ago, right after The Pretender, actually. So we're doing a bunch of work for PBS and documentaries.
So, I guess the million-dollar question is, how are you filmmaking in this crazy time that we're currently living in, this quarantine time? I mean, first of all, is it affecting Detroit the way it is, say, here in New York and New Jersey, or?
Yeah, I mean, it's affecting it pretty – it's been a pretty abrupt stop to work, you know, right?
Oh, so everything is shut down too?
Yeah, yeah. We can't – right now, we still can't go out and shoot. You know, we can – I think if there's some exceptions, if it's like a COVID safety video or, you know, something essential, I guess, mm-hmm. you can shoot that. But, you know, we had a shoot the day before it all got shut down, and – you know, we did that and we haven't shot. That was like March, middle of March. And, you know, while we were on the job, our clients were getting calls saying we can't go back in the office on Monday. And then all production was halted for a while. But, I mean, what we've been doing in the meantime, like I said, we shot that right before the shutdown. And we had a pretty big project that we shot a couple weeks before that we had to do the post-production on anyways. So we've been keeping, you know, pretty busy editing projects that we've started. And, you know, our friends at PBS, they still have to keep their TV shows going. So they're shooting it on Zooms and, you know, doing interviews like we're doing now. And we've been cutting those together for broadcast and, you know, using footage that's been in our archives for a while to kind of supplement that stuff. So we've been keeping busy, and the true silver lining is, like, we've been able to get a lot of passion projects, like side projects that we've been putting off for a while, and we're starting to, like, you know, make some ground up on those, which is, like, exciting. You know, it's like the silver lining. It's unfortunate this is going on, but really nice to dig into the stuff we've been excited for a while but haven't been able to dig into.
Well, I mean, and like you said, in a weird way, this time gives this quarantine period, this stop work order period, does give us time to explore other avenues or other hobbies that we always wanted to do. I mean, whether it's something basic as gardening or cooking or writing a film or even starting up these right. podcasts. I mean, I would never have been doing – I wouldn't be doing these live stream shows if it wasn't for the shutdown of everything, because my traditional show was more of on the road, going to the restaurants, going to the bakeries, and you know, talking to the owners. So in a way, for me, this is awesome because I get to now connect with people across the country, across the world, even. Like, a couple weeks ago, I interviewed a guy in Italy. So I mean, you know, it's like you said, there is this silver lining to all this craziness that's going on. So what do you think it's going to be like when they say, okay, go back to work? Is it going to be, I mean, this whole social distancing, I think that they're not going to just remove that. I think you're still going to have to wear these face coverings and stuff. So what are some of your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, my first thought, you know, which was interesting, you know, like once, you know, a few weeks into this, we were watching TV and I saw an old commercial, you know, I don't know what it was for, but it, you know, it was like a real estate or insurance, right? And at the end, they gave each other a big handshake. And I was like, oh, you know, like, you know, one thing, like, just like detail wise, that's, you know, you're going to have to get rid of that stuff. No one wants to see that. Or if you see a crowd, you know, you're kind of like, when was that shot? What is that crowd? You know, so there's going to be a lot of like getting rid of that stuff, you know, that old, you know, they're going to have to update that footage basically. So that's, you know, that's good. It's work, but it's sad. I mean, like, I was telling my wife, you know, this handshake. I hope the handshake doesn't die. You know, like it's such a there's so many less people are giving handshakes these days. Anyways, you know, it's like a high five or a fist bump, a old fashioned handshake. Now is almost going to be. I hope it's not extinct after this.
Oh, I hope. I mean, I'm a. You know, we're Italians, so I like to hug and kiss people.
Yeah.
I'm like, you got to be kidding. I haven't been. I mean, I went to visit my grandmother over the weekend. You know, I kept the 6 feet, you know, distance, but even I can't even give my grandmother a kiss. Hello. It's like it's killing me.
I know.
I mean, really, but you're right. I mean, I don't think the handshake will ever go away. Maybe for the first few months after this craziness, maybe it'll kind of, you know, maybe like you said, maybe a fist bump or an arm tap. But yeah, I don't know. I hope not, at least.
I know.
and, And the other thing is, like, you know, they want to start slowly bringing back sports. And even to, like, you know, to televise these things, I guess that they could be further far enough away from the action that it won't be interfering or too right. close. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how life gets back to this, what they're calling a new normal. But
yeah, I know some of the other changes, you know, might for us might be just smaller crews because we're going to have to keep that distance. And, you know, I can just hear it now. You know, they're going to say, hey, we have this shoot going on, but we only want a small crew, you know, and maybe, you know, I don't know. You have to eliminate some positions just to, you know, keep that distance. So
it'll make you use your ingenuity a little bit. You have to really kind of say, okay, how can we make this work with less people than we would usually have on a shoot like this?
Right, right. There's that. And I think, you know, the other cool thing too, is I think people are, you know, going to get used to, like, doing it yourself, you know, like doing this recording a Zoom and all that stuff. So I think that's kind of a positive. You know, people will kind of take those little projects in house and save some of the larger projects for, you know, a production company or something like that. So get creative that way.
So I want to talk a little bit about the Pretender. Now the Pretender, the documentary was phenomenal. I personally, I'm a huge Rocky. I'm wearing my Marciano shirt today, but I am a huge Rocky Balboa fan. Ever since I was a kid. I mean, that's everybody says, oh, The Godfather's the best. But no. To me, Rocky is the greatest movie of all time. I absolutely love Rocky. But so the Pretender it follows this gentleman. His name is Mike Kunda. He's based out of Pennsylvania. Actually, wait, he's up in Scranton area. He's from originally.
Yeah, his he grew up in Scranton, and his parents still live in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Yeah, yeah.
So kind of give us a little bit about, you know, who Mike is and how this project came to be.
So Mike is, you know, when I met him, he was the biggest Rocky fan, like, hands down, right? And, like, you know, like, everyone thinks they're a big fan, right? And we are. And, you know, I agree with you. I think, like, Rocky's, like, the perfect movie. You know, it became a joke to some people later when he did Rocky 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, Creed, 7, you know. But if you watch that movie, it's like, you know, the original Rocky is like the original independent film. I mean, it was made on a low budget. There's no stunts. There's, you know, besides the fighting. It's just a stripped-down great film that has a love story, an underdog story. There's even a hint of mafia in it. It's an Italian-American story. There's all these things. So I love the movie and, you know, recommend everyone that thinks it's a joke to take another look at it, you know. But so I met Mike randomly, and it was right when I was getting into filmmaking. And I bought a camera, and I thought, you know, I want to start to shoot some things that would be good for my portfolio, you know. And I met Mike, and I thought, God, he'd make a good story. Even if my camera work isn't that great, I think his story will make up for it, and people will watch a little five-minute video that I put together about this Rocky fan. And so the first trip down to Pennsylvania was me and my brother-in-law. You know, we rented a car, and I actually had, like, a production assistant that bailed out at the last second. So my brother-in-law came, and, you know. But so we went down to see Mike and start to film. And, you know, right off the bat, you know, number one, I thought he was the biggest Rocky fan. And then when I got there, it was like nothing but proof. Like, oh, my God, this is – he is – you know, this, everything he said, he wasn't exaggerating. He might have been even sandbagging, you know. Like, if you see in the film, like, one of the first things we did was we went in his basement, and it was just – four walls covered with Rocky stuff. And, you know, like, the one part in the movie is, it wasn't just like, oh, I found this and I bought it. You know, like, one of the things that we left in the film is he has, like, a Rocky championship belt, right? But that wasn't how he bought it. He bought four of them, took the best parts from each belt, re-sewed it, put it all together, swapped out a couple of things. And then he put it on the wall, you know, and it was like, whoa, this is amazing.
Serious.
Yeah. So it was that, and I interviewed his parents, was one of the first things we did. Mm-hmm. And after interviewing his mom and dad, I mean, we had him on camera, and I was amazed how serious they took Mike, you know, and his Rocky thing. They were proud of him. They were worried about him. They were happy for, you know, all these things. It was too big to cram into 5 minutes. You know, I just kept thinking, like, if we shortcut this and make it a 5 minute film, I'm going to, you know, be so mad at myself if we take that shortcut. So we definitely took the long road, you know? Yeah. So, but we ended up filming him for like 5 years. And the doc is about, you know, what makes him tick. Basically, it's about what makes this guy tick.
I mean, and he's still doing his Rocky thing. I follow him on, you know, on social media, and he always posting great videos of the different, like, whenever he finds these little figurines or, you know, the different clothes. Like, he has every single wardrobe that Sylvester Stallone wore in the movie, he has the exact, like, replica. And even down to, like, I know they recently, the Sly Stallone shop recently put out the jogging suit from, what was it, Rocky IV? Yeah. But he has the real one. He has the real one.
Right. I was just going to say, Mike's stuff is better than that. Yeah, you know, like, yeah. You know, he talks about the sweatpants, you know, and he's, you know, he says, like, and this is in the film too, but he's got the gray sweatpants, but it's not just any pair of gray sweatpants. These are gray sweatpants from the 70s. They have a tie string instead of elastic. And also, if you look close, it's got the string has the same number of knots as Rocky does in the movie. All right. You know, he paused it and he's authentic. And you know, not to give too much away, but Sly has recognized how authentic he is with what he does. So, it's cool.
Even when he was, when they filmed, I guess it was Creed 2, that was actually Mike is, he's commenting.
Oh, is he?
Yo. And then he said straight up correct on the sweatpants.
Yeah, that was one of the first things that we shot. I thought, this is cool.
That's wild. But yeah, but again, I mean, but really, you know, but when I met Mike again at the premiere in Jersey City, and he just seems like the most genuine, you know, down to earth guy in the world. So what was it like to be able to follow him for those, you know, I guess it was on and off for 5 or so years. What was it like to kind of to get into his mind?
Yeah. So yeah, it was like 5 years on and off. You know, we'd go, we shot him the first time, and then maybe 8 months later we shot him again, and you know, a year goes by, and so it was on and off. But the great thing was, like, Mike really was an open book. You know, like, he let us in to everything, you know, all the details of his life, you know, his parents, people he worked with, his wife. And, he told us this story about, you know, there was a time when I would dress up. It wasn't so much Rocky. It was Rambo. I dressed up as Rambo, and, you know, I'd go into the woods and I'd do this. And, you know, I was like, you know, he told me that on the phone at one point. And I said, man, I'd love to film that, you know. And about, I, you're kind of hesitant, you know, like, I kind of asked, you know, this much of him, you know. And I finally, I said, Mike, would you show us, you know, where you went? Yeah, I'll show you. Yeah, of course. Come on. So, you know, it was an open book. And I mean, that really helped a lot. You know, that was huge.
So how can people see The Pretender? Is it only available in theaters? Or is it on, can you stream it? What's the best way to see it?
Yeah. So it's streaming on Amazon Prime right now. It's free on Amazon Prime. You can see it on iTunes. If you're out of the country, we had like a bunch of people reach out in the last couple of weeks out of the United States about how to get it. So it's Vimeo on demand is the best way to get it there. What else? Tubi is kind of a new platform, but yeah, the big ones are Amazon, iTunes, and and you can buy DVDs and Blu-rays online too. And we're actually, I don't know if you noticed, but Sylvester Stallone Instagrammed about the film.
Uh-huh.
Did you know that? Yeah,
I don't know if I saw that.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. So 2 weeks ago, wow. I meant to get to this. Yeah, so you asked, like, what am I doing in this downtime? Well, about 2 weeks ago, Sylvester Stallone posted about our film. So it came out of the blue. It was like in the middle of the night here. You know, he's in LA, so it was like 11 a.m. there, or 11 p.m. But he must have just been, you know, watching Amazon. He started recording himself, and he said, if you're a Rocky fan, and you have got to see this documentary about the world's number one Rocky interpreter, the Pretender. And he says, it's a must-see documentary. And so it's been like going crazy for the last 2 weeks.
If that isn't a ringing endorsement, I don't know what is. Right. from the man himself.
Yeah, I'll send you a link. But was like, and it was funny. Me and Mike both did the same thing. Like I watched it, and you see him watching it, and he puts on the Pretender poster. I'm like, oh, that's cool. And then it dawned on me, like maybe there's audio. And sure enough, if you want to see, I'm like, oh my God, he's talking about our movie. So since then it's been going nuts. It's been like 2 weeks of, the Instagram blew up. We were trending on Amazon Prime. We were like the number two film. It was a Will Smith, with that dystopian. I forget what it's called. I don't know. At the end of the
Was it a Gemini or something?
I don't know. Who watched that?
Yeah. I'd rather watch Pretender.
That was number one, and Pretender was number two. And that's, it was like awesome. On the front page of Amazon for a couple of days. So
that is awesome.
Yeah. So we might end up on some more platforms because of that. And we actually talked – the distributor called today, and they said, this might be going even bigger. So that'd be cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. But also in the film, besides obviously following Mike, you also talk to a few other famous boxers. So you talk a little bit to Larry Holmes.
Yep. Yeah.
So you talk to what? To Chuck to who was who Rocky was really supposedly based on, right. Chuck Wepner.
Yeah. So we talked to Larry Holmes and Chuck Wepner. And I feel like both of those guys could have their own documentary. I'm sure they have. Larry Holmes has a great 30 for 30, but just like two of the nicest guys ever. And to hear Chuck Wepner talk about Mike and Sylvester Stallone, like you could tell. I walked out of that interview. Chuck has become like good friends with Mike Kunda, and I could tell it's because Mike reminds him of like a young Sylvester Stallone. And I said, because he kept like, I don't know, the way he was interacting with Mike when we were interviewing him, at the end I said, Chuck, does he just flat out remind you of a young Sylvester? And he said, I think he does. I think that's why I love this guy so much. those were like two of the really fun interviews. And Larry Holmes was like the first interview we ever did for the film.
Larry Holmes, Chuck Wepner is huge, but Larry Holmes, he was the man in the 80s.
He was fun.
Yeah. Even him, he seems very active on social media. I follow him on Instagram. I always see him posting videos, and he's like his training routine. He was punching it one day. This is awesome. This is awesome.
He's like the happiest guy ever, Larry Holmes. He said when we interviewed him, he said like Don King took all of his money basically, and the last fight he had was Tyson. Mm-hmm. The last fight that he made some money, and I forget what he made. It was either 2 or 7 million. I forget, two million or 7 million. But all that money, he was smart with it, with the Tyson money. That was the last fight. He fought for the money, he told us. And he's got a restaurant. He's got his house right by his restaurant. He's got a great office, a great wife, and he just loves his life. And it was so cool to see. And he's all there, too. He was very proud of the fact that his mind is all there. He said, I still got it all. And we said, that's obvious.
he's one guy I would love to meet. I know it's funny the world is small. My dad was a caterer back in the 80s, and he used to cater for Larry Holmes. When he used to have like the big fights, in the AC or in the city. So it really is, the world is small. So let's talk a little bit about is there anything that you have on the, I guess right now on the back burner because of all the craziness, but is there any kind of projects that you could talk about, any kind of hints or secrets you want to let out?
So a couple things, one of them is that like that film discussion, talking about, what we can do during this downtime. But I had that film discussion with the Abruzzo Heritage Society out of Washington, D.C. They invited me, in a roundabout way because of The Pretender and some, you know, they heard about me. So that film discussion was awesome, you know, and that was something, you know, I studied up on and first time doing that, something new.
So
for
what,
me.
So kind of tell what, yeah. What was it was, I know it was on a big night. So kind of how did yeah. it work? I mean, obviously it was through a Zoom platform, right? Or through
Yeah, the Heritage Society invited me and they did a little bit of advertising to get people involved. And it was just basically we were going to stream the movie and kind of do a little intro and, you know, outro to it. But we came up with the idea to just make it a film discussion, almost like a book club. Right. So everyone watched the movie beforehand, and there ended up being about 20 of us live on the Zoom. And I kind of just led the discussion about the film, you know, like how it was made, you know, why Stanley Tucci made it. I mean, he was kind of like had his own Stallone story. He was getting typecast as a, you know, the heavy, the typical stereotype of an Italian-American. And he said, I can offer more than this. So he took 5 years writing the Big Night screenplay, him and his cousin, and he co-directed it. And so we talked a little bit about that, you know, the background of why he made it. And then we got into the nuances of the film, you know, how they shot it, you know, the story that they were trying to tell. You know, there's a story of commerce versus art, which was Tucci's story that he was kind of fighting in Hollywood. And there was also this struggle between traditional Italians, which, you know, his brother represented in the film. And he represented kind of the Italian-American, you know, that it's getting a little bit away from the traditional values and standards, I guess you'd say. So there was that whole, and we just got into that and talked, you know, how they communicated that in the film and just everyone's reaction to it. And it was awesome. It was, you know, like you said, something new to do during this downtime. And I loved it. And I think they might try and do a couple more. So
oh, that's awesome. So I mean, really, that is one of my favorite, I guess, lesser known films, because really The Big Night, it's either like you know about it or you don't know about it. There really is no middle ground. It's to me, it's, it really is. You're right, though, because it tells the story of these two brothers. And, you know, you're right. The one wants to kind of, I guess, not a sellout, but in a way he wants to sell out the traditions of, you know, putting what spaghetti and meatballs on the menu, as opposed to, you know, the risotto that takes 45 minutes to make. So is that one of your favorite films, or how did you decide on that film?
You know, it was kind of cool, 'cause it's not one of my favorite films. I haven't seen it in so long. But Chris Reniker from the Abruzzo Society came up with that idea, which was cool, 'cause it made me dig in and discover this film, you know, way deeper than I ever have. But I, you know, fell in love with the, you know, the themes of it, you know, like you said, like, you know, you want to call him a sellout, but that's, you know, in the story, you know, that's why he came to America, because he wanted to be successful.
Yes.
And to be successful. In this part of New Jersey, it takes place in the Jersey Shore in the 50s. You kind of had to compromise a little bit. You know, you gotta, on some level, you don't have to, but it's okay to maybe give the customer what they want. If they want spaghetti and meatballs, maybe you give it to them, right? I you know, I don't know. And you know, we talked about it in the film discussion. It was a great discussion, and it was like, you know, the rival restaurant is totally sold out, right? You know, Pascal's, and it looks like Buca is out there. And you know what though, like, people are in there having a good time, you know, and you can't deny people liking spaghetti and meatballs, you know, once in a while. So what, you know?
Yeah.
So there was that. We got into that stuff really deep. I mean, the discussion was supposed to go an hour, and it ended up going almost 2 hours.
Wow.
It was a cool experience.
Actually, there's a comment here. Sal Rubino, he said that Zoom discussion was fun.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Yeah, it was something different and something cool. But what leads me to, you know, also, like you said, what else are we doing? Another thing that we shot right before the shutdown was a TV pilot that we shot. And it's kind of like, it's a local show that we hope to pitch around town here to start with. But it's like, it's kind of like No Reservations and Anthony Bourdain, but local.
Oh, wow.
And what we did was, you know, there's all these cultural enclaves in Michigan that people don't really know about. We went for the ones that people don't know about. And there was the pilot that we shot was about Vietnamese culture in Michigan. And there is like almost like a little Vietnam here, but it's in the suburbs. And we shot, you know, we have a host, great guy, you know, like a very curious guy, you know, in real life. So he was a perfect host. And we went around and we went to a Vietnamese market. You know, we went to a pho restaurant. We went to a Buddhist temple here, like next to a 7-Eleven, literally next to a 7-Eleven is a Buddhist temple. And we walked into these places and they were like, yeah, come on in. We went to a party. We just went to a straight up Vietnamese party. They said, yeah, come on. And, you know, the parallels are the same in any culture. You know, they, one of the big themes that we landed on in the TV pilot was that they were going through that too. Like, you know, straddling between their Vietnamese heritage and becoming Vietnamese Americans, you know? And I brought it up in the film discussion, but, you know, I asked the guy, I said, you know, that happens with Italians too. You're kind of like, what do? Do you Americanize or do you stick to this? And, you know, he gave really great advice and said, you know what you do? You take the best from both cultures and put them together and teach your kids that, you know?
Yeah,
and I said, that's great. I'm glad you have an answer, you know? So, but that's another thing that we've had time to finally dig into the edit on that and start to put that together.
So, let me ask you, we have to do a little bit about food, obviously.
All right,
so
cool.
We got to dive into the food a little bit. So, obviously, it's not really an Italian thing, but what's a Coney Island dog? Isn't that like a Detroit dog?
Funny.
Isn't that like a Detroit thing?
Yeah, I guess it is. But, you know, it's funny that it's Coney Island, right? Because, you know. But, yeah, so there's the Coney Island hot dogs. First of all, there's Coney restaurants all over the city and the suburbs, you know, Coney Island restaurants. You know, they're like diners where they specialize in Coney dogs.
But what is a Coney, what is a Coney dog, though?
So a Coney dog is a chili dog.
Okay.
So a hot dog with a steamed bun, usually, chili, onions, and mustard. So pretty basic, right?
And we call that here a Texas wiener.
Yeah, I learned that when I went to Scranton. I actually bought a hat. I almost wore it today because it said Texas Wiener something. And I thought, what is that? So we went in there because we didn't know what on earth it was. And then we're like, oh, it's a Coney dog. You know? But and actually, I wore it the other day. And my kids said, Dad, when did you go to Texas? You know, I said, no, it's a long story.
It's a long story.
Yeah.
So is there one, is one of them, I know what, there's like two rival restaurants right next to each other.
Yeah. Yep.
So if you go to Detroit, which one do you have to go to? Or we can't spoil it.
No. I don't say both. Lafayette. So there's Lafayette and there's American Coney Island. And Lafayette, to me, by far and away, is the place you're supposed to go.
Really?
You know? And it's, you know what it looks like? And when you go to Philly and there's Pat's and Geno's.
Yes.
Lafayette is Pat's. You know what I mean? Geno's is a little brighter and they might sell a t-shirt and this.
Yeah.
That. That's what I equate it to. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And the other famous Detroit food is Detroit style pizza, which is beginning a lot of play even here on the East Coast in New York. Yeah. There's a couple of places that opened up and make this Detroit style pizza. So what is Detroit style pizza?
You know, it's such a funny thing because it seemed like 5 years ago, you started to see. First of all, I just thought that was pizza when I was a kid. It wasn't Detroit style pizza. That's what pizza was. That's the way my grandma made it. My cousin Phil, his mom Mary, she made like that was the best pizza. But so it's thicker than New York, definitely less thick than Chicago style.
Mm-hmm.
It's traditionally square or rectangle. And it's baked, you know, they'll bake it a lot of times. And, it seemed like it caught on like 5 years ago. We were in a shoot in Seattle and we passed this place called like Detroit Pizza in downtown Seattle. And I said to Danny, like, what is this place? You know? All of a sudden it got popular, but there was a couple families, you know, there's a friend of ours that did a little documentary about it. But there was I don't know all the details, but there was a family that, you know, a couple families that claim they brought it over from Sicily. They call it Sicilian style pizza too. Uh-huh. And brought it over, and then the one guy quit and started his own, and then that guy started his, you know, and it kind of spread out. But and a lot of times they put the cheese first and the sauce on top after that. And you know, like there's an old clip of Martin Scorsese and his mom on David Letterman, uh-huh. and she makes a Sicilian style pizza for Dave, and it's exactly like we make it here.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, so look it up. It's such a funny clip too, because you know Marty and his mom are. Oh my god, they're just like the best. But and then there was a rumor that the pans that they used were like pans that they used like automotive related pans. Like they were like a couple inches deep, and they have something about the either it was like an oil pan or they put parts in it, and that's what would go down the assembly line. You know, they'd be like. Oh, you know, like a parts and some bolts, and they'd be in that tray, and that somebody grabbed that and cooked the pizza. And I don't know if that part's true.
it makes for a good story, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there a particular place that you have to go to? Like, is there like a very the originator of Detroit of the Detroit style, or are they all good?
So Buddy's, a place called Buddy's Pizza, pretty much seems to be where everyone says, yeah, that's the original. But for me, there's a place called Buscemi's. It's a kind of a smaller, not a franchise, but like I think I have a group of places. But it's like a party store. We call it a party store, like a liquor store.
Okay.
They sell pizza in there too. Huh. And Buscemi's is where you go like when we were teenagers in the 90s. You'd go to Buscemi's and you get one or two slices. You get a pop, right? You call it soda.
Oh, yeah.
You get a pop and two slices, and you eat like a king for $3.
Oh,
and
okay.
So that's my favorite. And it's not – maybe it's not the best pizza, but it's nostalgic pizza. It's
just, yeah.
I have a three-year-old son, Gianluca, and I take him up there, and we'll go get a slice. And he says, Buscemi's, Dad, we're going to Buscemi's. So that's my favorite.
So somebody was telling me that there's a place, it's like in a terrible area. I guess he said it's by 8 Mile, but he said the pizza was pretty, it's like famous for Detroit style pizza. I can't remember the name of it.
Do you think it was Buddy's maybe?
Is that by 8 Mile? I don't.
I think there's one. Yeah. I think there's one out there. There's a Buddy's. What could be on 8 Mile? I don't know.
I'll have to ask him again. He was telling me the other day too. I mean, I Detroit is a place I have on my list to go. I don't even know how far. I have to fly there. Do you have to drive there? I don't even, you know.
It's like an hour. It's an hour and a half flight for you.
Oh, really? From Jersey?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe once this quarantine period is over, I could take a trip out to Detroit. So
you could sleep right there if you want.
Perfect. I got a place to stay. So what are some of your go-to dishes? Do you cook at home or?
I don't cook. My like I said, my wife is she's actually half Sicilian and half Italian, and she cooks every night. And you know this quarantine, she's been like kicking it up a notch, man. It's been I told her this has been so fun to have all the her making all these dishes, but she cooks every day. She cooks every day, and her pizza is great. Oh God, I gotta think. There's so many things that she makes that's so good. But like some of my favorites, like Spadini. I love Spadini. Mm-hmm. Her favorite is pizza aiola. You know what that is?
Yeah.
That's her favorite. Her dad is from a little town called Lacedonia, and that was his. And he was a butcher too, of course.
That's in Avellino.
I believe so. Yeah,
because
yeah.
there's a big population of people from Lacedonia and Montclair, New Jersey.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's San Donato is their saint.
Okay, off the
hill. Yeah. Lacedonia, because when my family, when part of my family came over, they settled in Montclair. They were Sicilian, but there was a lot of Lacedonia people, and that's wild. I've never really heard anybody else talk about the town.
Yeah. So, but. Yeah, what else? What? God, I'm drawing a blank for some reason. But like, when I was a kid, we loved making like pina colada, which I'm sure you make, right?
Do you, the struffoli?
Yeah, but yeah, okay, we're a little bit different.
That's very and, Sicilian, calling a pina colada.
Yeah, and then like the sfingi we used to make with it was like a fried dough balls, right?
Yes, yes, yes. So actually, my wife commented. She said the name of the place was Cloverleaf Pizza.
Oh yeah, that's in my hometown. That's in East Detroit. The first Cloverleaf. Who was that? Your wife?
She was with me. We went to my friend Mike. He owns a little pasta shop in Nutley, New Jersey, and he was telling us about when he was out to Detroit. So she reminded me. She has a better memory than I do. She remembered the name of the pizzeria.
That's we just went back there, you know, because I, you know, again, that's like between 8 and 9 miles, I think. Yeah. And so I live out of like 19 mile, you know, just to give it. Uh-huh. And we just went back there a couple of months ago, right before the quarantine. We were downtown. It was, let's stop at Cloverleaf. So, yeah, that's like a high school hangout. Yeah.
Really? Is it in the area has changed, I guess?
Yeah. It used to be, like I said, you know, it used to be a lot of Italians in East Detroit and in that area. And they just kind of moved north and just spread out. I mean, they're still there, you know. But we're all spread out a little bit more.
But yeah. Cloverleaf doesn't sound like an Italian name. I guess was the owner Italian? Was the owner Italian?
Yeah. The owner was Italian. I took a picture. He even had like
actually, Sal Rubino said Gus Guerra owns Cloverleaf, originated the pizza at Buddy's.
Oh, see, that's like the Buddy starts, and that's what I was saying. Like the guy leaves, and then he's like, "Oh, this over there." So yeah. But I'm trying to think of all their dishes, man. My wife makes like homemade pasta at home a lot, and you know, anything she puts in there is gold. They made gnocchi the other day, you know, my kids helped and stuff. So it's just like, it's just ideal, man. It's just great to include the kids and just keep it all going.
So even the kids have no school, I guess, also in Detroit, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's home.
Right. Yeah. So
I guess in a way though, it is good to be able to have the family together. In a way, it's almost like going back to when our grandparents came here or our great grandparents came here, where the families really were able to come together. You know, whether it's a good time or a bad time.
Oh yeah, it is, man. I mean, you see, like, you know, my wife, she never lost it. I mean, she's. For her to like, okay, I'll make bread, you know, but just have that going on even more now than ever is again one of those other silver linings. And you know, just all this, and just to take a little bit more time to enjoy dinner and sit around the table a little bit longer. And you know, I can sit at the table, you know, while she's cooking and help as much as I can because I'm not, you know, commuting home from work or anything like that. So it's been awesome that way, you know. And we've all been like calling each other more, you know, my siblings, and you know, just, you know, we can't see each other, you know, we've been driving by each other's homes, but just to like talk a little bit more, like, hey, how you doing? What'd you guys do today? You're going crazy. So am I, you know, but that's all been great. And you know, another thing that's been cool is my kids can kind of see me work, you know, like I'm at home editing and they come in the room and dad, what is that? You know, they're only 10 and 9 and 3. But, you know, what is that? Oh, what's this thing? You know, we went to this Vietnamese restaurant and they're like, you know, and it's kind of cool to be able to have them kind of participate a little bit or at least be able to kind of work in front of them. I don't know.
Yeah. So what's the best way people can contact you? Is it email? Is it your website, social media?
Yeah, I would, you know, if you want to see the Pretender, Instagram, we're really active on the Instagram account. But anything, you know, just filmmaking related, we're at Free Age. What is it? We have a Instagram. Our email is just jim@freeageproductions.com. And, you know, reach out to us anytime. Yeah.
Now, I know we were talking a little bit about, I guess it was a couple of months ago, we're talking about you had an, I don't know if you had an idea about making a documentary about the Malocchio.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Russo brothers put out, you know, like not a contest, but they'll fund documentaries. Mm-hmm. So I was just trying to think, you know, I'm dying to make some kind of Italian American based documentary. And actually I had an idea to do something with the Sicilian language. Because, like mm-hmm. I said, a lot of the Sicilians, even, you know, from Terracini moved here with their dialect. Right. And they brought that dialect here. And now 50 years later, the dialect is almost stronger here than it is back in Terracini. So I wanted to thinking about doing something about that. And a friend of mine, actually, she kind of like in a parallel universe made the almost exact same thing. And she's from Terracini.
Wow.
So, yeah. And we became friends out of it and all that. But so I was trying to think, like, what else could we do? And the Molocchio, I just thought would be such a cool documentary, almost like if we could do it in a stylized way, like almost like the aesthetics of like The Exorcist, you know, like make it dark and scary and dig up like, you know, where did this come from and unearth this this curse, right? So that was kind of the idea. Yeah, so you and I talked about it, and I talked to Patrick over there at the Italian American podcast. And uh-huh. Yeah, so I don't know. What do you think?
Hey, I think this is a good outlet that if people are interested, they can contact you if they have any, you know, any kind of, you know, I guess what would the word be? Any kind of background in it? Because I know it's pretty wild. Like you can only learn this prayer like at midnight on Christmas Eve, and only like a certain person can do it. So it's really and so pretty much if people don't know what the Molocchio is, the evil eye. So it's like the I don't want to do it, but it's like when you give the two the pointer and the pinky finger, you give them the horn. It's called the horn.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like so some people they will wear an amulet or they call it like a pepper. It looks like a little pepper to protect against the evil eye. There's also other like ways to actually draw the evil eye out of you, because it's pretty much like I guess it's an easy way to say, like, if somebody's jealous of you, they could put the evil eye on you, and then you have to have that curse removed from your. So you sometimes they say that you get really bad headaches, and then people pray the prayer. So it's definitely an interesting topic that less people talk about it today, because again, we're so far removed from the immigrant generation and the subsequent generations that, you know, I mean, obviously I grew up hearing about it and. You know, about the olive oil and all this craziness, but it is an interesting topic that really not many people have delved into.
I was, and it's not really like a Sicilian thing per se. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't super knowledgeable about it, but I started to dig in, and it's super interesting, man. They say, you know, there's controversy. Did it originate in Rome or Turkey, or it came from Turkey and then Rome? And there's like real subtleties of it. Like if I walked into your house and said, wow, what a nice, you know, nice flag. I wish I had one like that. Like that, I wish I had one like is the jealousy. And I might have unknowingly put a curse on you that easy. So it was really like, it's cool.
I know like the Calabrese are big into it, the Neapolitans. Yeah. But you're right. The Sicilians, I don't know if there's that deeper connection to it.
Yeah, not too much. Like, I didn't really grow up with it, you know, and that was one of the things my wife said, like, you didn't grow up. We didn't grow up with that. Why do you want to do that? I'm like, well, I just have, like, this vision, you know, of, like, The Exorcist mixed with National Geographic, you know. Like, I don't know.
Well, if anybody's out there that has some, you know, that has some insight, you know, get in touch with Jim.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I guess it is also good to kind of highlight or spotlight, you know, different aspects of our culture to be able to bring it to a larger audience. You know, I think there's something like 26 million Americans identify as Italian or Italian American. So that's a pretty large population that really isn't getting tapped into. So really, you know, to kind of, you know, teach people about, you know, and obviously, you know, the Italian American experience isn't just about the Godfather, isn't just about the mafia. Yeah. There's a lot, you know, obviously there's the food aspect, and then there's all the sports heroes, and you know, I mean, so really, even look at boxing.
Yeah,
there was some amazing Italian American boxers, and even baseball players.
Yeah,
Joe Rizzuto, Yogi Berra. I mean, you know, the list goes on and on. And then all these little different enclaves that have different statues for different saints. So really, they're really like if you have the time to kind of delve into it, the sky really is the limit.
And the other part of the appeal for me on that was to keep it alive, like to keep those stories going. Because like, you know, we're, you know, you and I are both like, yeah, I don't know, something about the olive oil, you drop it in the water, and it's like, you know, to keep it fresh, you know, just put it all in a nice, you know, this is an overview of what this is, and hopefully, you know, that'll live on, you know. Yeah. I don't know, it could be a series, who knows, you know, it could be one day it's this doc, and you know, get this catalog of documentaries that will never lose our culture that way. I don't know.
That's a great point. Somebody, that's a really good point.
You know, just to keep it going. So.
But Jim, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule today to come on to the show. So again, any last words, any last ways that they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, if you're looking for The Pretender, you know, pretendermovie.com. And if you're looking for Danny and I, or, you know, if anyone has any ideas, you know, Italian American or otherwise, you know, it's just great to brainstorm and connect with people. So you can see us at freeageproductions.com.
Awesome. Well, again, Jim, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to come on the show.
Awesome. Thank you, buddy. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you. My name is Anthony Scilia, better known as Tony Mangia. You've been watching At the Table with Tony live stream show. We'll see you next time. Ciao for now.
At the Table with Tony would like to thank its sponsors, Rocco Muriale, Rob Quick, Joseph Cirillo, Raymond Guarini, Tom Gilmore, Oli G, Peter Ziza, Brian McGuire, Peter Ferreira, Rich Ottenstrauer, Anna Mavrianos, Antonio Pepinella, Anthony Ferraro, Sandra and Bob LaMotta, Mike Guerro, The Italian Enclaves Historical Society,